Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you very much. When you open your newspaper and read the headline, "Teen Killed, Another Injured in Accident," do you hurt for the parents, brothers and sisters, grandparents, and other family members who are suffering because of the loss of a dear child? When you learn that an older person bought alcohol and gave it to an underage person, does that not make the pain even more intense? Does it make you angry to know the enormous damage alcohol has done to families and to communities? Do the distillers, vintners, brewers, and other manufacturers of alcoholic beverages share any responsibility for the tragedies associated with strong drink? Should churches speak out against the makers, distributors, and retailers who provide this mind-altering and death-dealing substance to our nation? Do churches have a sacred obligation to warn their members and others, especially our young people, about drinking? If they fail to warn, will God hold them accountable for their cowardice? I do not personally know anyone connected to the alcohol industry, but I wonder about the people who make beverage alcohol or the ones who sell it to the people of our nation. When they read an article about the damage alcohol has caused to a family, or when they learn from television news about the ravages of alcohol, do they ever go into depression because they may have contributed to the heartaches families suffer? Do they ever ask themselves, did my rum or my whiskey cause the accident that killed a beautiful teenage girl or a handsome young man or a whole family? It bothers me to have to say it, but it is my considered judgment that none of these tragedies registers with those who manufacture, distribute, or sell beverage alcohol. Their consciences have become so hardened, they can probably read the newspaper accounts of these tragedies at breakfast and continue to eat their meal as if they had no responsibility. So what difference does it make if my liquor has killed some young person? If that young person had not bought it from me, he or she would have bought it from somebody else. After all, I make a lot of money by selling this dangerous, destructive, and diabolical substance. You do not expect me to quit selling liquor just because someone was killed when he drank my liquor, do you? When I was in Henderson, Tennessee a few weeks ago to attend the annual Fried Hardeman University lectureship, someone gave me a copy of the Metro section of the Commercial Appeal, Monday, February the 3rd, 2003. The newspaper published an article with the title, "Former Memphian Finds Calling Bottling Rum in Kelso, Tennessee," page B1. I have always thought of a calling as being a doctor, a farmer, a school teacher, a preacher, or a lawyer. I never thought of a calling as being the manufacturer of an item that has such a sordid history. It is my judgment, based on scriptures and on more than a half century of observing what alcohol does, that making and selling liquor ranks along with manslaughter, abortion, theft, and family violence. In fact, in many cases, alcohol contributes to all of these under some circumstances. To deny that is to be ignorant, or hard-hearted, or both. The article in the newspaper says that Saturday is bottling day at the tiny distillery of Pritchard Fine Rum, page B1. How do the Pritchards decide if their rum is fine? Does the quality of the rum rest on the number of people who kill themselves or others because they drank Pritchard Fine Rum? How many people would have to die before Pritchard Fine Rum or Jack Daniel's whiskey would be ruled illegal and the plant shut down? I can tell you without conferring with any of the people involved in making strong drink, if a dozen people were killed every day from drinking the deadly products, the companies would continue to make and to sell so long as they made money. The damage alcohol does seems to have no bearing on the people who make it. Does it bother you when you read in the papers or see bumper stickers on beer trucks that read, "Think when you drink"? Just a few days ago, as I drove from my house to the church building where I preach, I noticed a Miller beer truck with a sign on it, "Think when you drink." That is the worst kind of hypocrisy. If people would use their heads, they will run from strong drink as if it were a poisonous serpent. The manufacturer or distributor does not want people to think when they drink. If they did think, it would bankrupt every liquor maker and dealer in the United States. They would all be out of business pronto. If you imagine that people think when they drink, please listen to God's view of the matter. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has babbling? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine, they who go to seek mixed wine, look not upon the wine when it is red, when it gives his color in the cup, when it moves itself aright. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes shall behold strange women, and your heart shall utter perverse things. Yes, you shall be as the one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or as one who lies upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, you shall say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Proverbs 23, 29 through 35. Does that sound to you as if drinking and thinking are compatible? In the 1990s, Zondervan Publishing House of Grand Rapids, Michigan, produced a scholarly commentary on the entire Bible. The authors of these commentaries are some of the most respected seminary professors and writers in the United States and abroad. Volume 5 of the Expositor's Bible Commentary includes Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon. Dr. Alan P. Ross, professor of Old Testament studies at Trinity Episcopal School for Ministry, wrote the section on the book of Proverbs. Please listen to Dr. Ross's comments on the Proverbs passage on drinking. The sage, meaning the author of Proverbs, gives a vivid picture of one who drinks too much. He raves on and on, picks quarrels and fights, poisons his system with alcohol, gets bloodshot eyes, loses control, is confused, is unable to speak clearly, imagines things, and is insensitive to pain. While alcoholism is a medical problem, it is also a moral problem because it involves choices and brings danger to other people. Page 1072. One of the great tragedies of drinking is that many people have no idea when they have drunk too much. They may be dangerous to themselves and to others when they have had a very few drinks. James T. Draper, Jr., a prominent Southern Baptist preacher, wrote a commentary that he called Proverbs, The Secret of Beautiful Living. Draper provides some statistics that were gathered in 1977 in a survey conducted by the National Congress of Parents and Teachers. According to the survey, 75% of American high school students drink alcoholic beverages. 75%. Draper says that 50% of the heavy high school drinkers will become alcoholics. The number of teenage alcoholics in our nation is greater than the total number of people killed in World War I, World War II, the Korean conflict, and the Vietnam War. Page 104. Draper reports that one man said to him, "If a man wants to drink, he has a right to drink." Draper asked, "Does he really? After one glass of beer, a man will take 6 feet longer to stop his automobile than otherwise. If my daughter or yours were standing in the 6-foot danger zone, then his freedom is our business." Page 105. Did you notice this observation in Proverbs? At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Proverbs 23:32. Many of us, including your speaker, are deathly afraid of snakes. I know the Lord had a purpose in creating snakes, but I have yet to discover what it was. I am aware that snakes eat bugs and small rodents, but I like bugs and rodents better than I like snakes. But can you imagine an intelligent person having poisonous snakes in his house? never knowing when one might administer a fatal bite. The inspired writer knew how alcohol works. People start to drink just to have a good time, or to forget their troubles, or to be sociable. They never say, "I am beginning to drink so I can get down in the ditch and live like an animal." Does anyone turn to drink so he can become a drunk, or an alcoholic, or a bum? The truth is that no sane person ever starts drinking so he can kill someone on the highway or in an industrial accident. But alcohol is highly addictive. No drinker knows he will never become an alcoholic. The drinker complains, "They have struck me, you shall say, and I did not become sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake?" When individuals suffer emotionally and physically from using strong drink, do not intelligent men and women have the good sense to leave alcohol alone? As a matter of fact, most drinkers do not. They keep on drinking until they develop severe illnesses, such as cirrhosis of the liver, or heart trouble, or high blood pressure, or kill someone on our highways. Proverbs says they will seek more and more and more strong drink. Proverbs 23:35. Does it bother you when a drunk kills someone on American highways and then pleads diminished capacity because he was drunk? I believe it was Aristotle who said that a man who commits a crime while he is drunk deserves to be punished two times, one time for getting drunk and one for committing the crime. Any judge who allows a lawyer to plead diminished capacity for a client who killed while he was drinking ought to be prosecuted for malfeasance in office. Any lawyer who helps a man get a light sentence or none at all because he killed under the influence of alcohol is guilty of malpractice. Maybe not in the eyes of the law, but in the thinking of sensible people. A man who kills while he is drinking should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Prosecutors are negligent in their responsibilities when they fail to make drunk drivers pay for their crimes. And yet we have right here in our county a dangerous and damnable business, Pritchard's Rum Distillery, that specializes in furnishing the liquid that makes men, women, boys and girls drunks, that makes them act irresponsibly and stupidly, and that will kill some of the drinkers and others. Surely nobody who has bothered to read the newspapers or listen to the news on television or on radio will deny those facts. If they deny them or overlook them as being insignificant, it shows they have hearts as hard as stone. If God will condemn drunkards to eternal punishment, 1 Corinthians 6, 9-11, what will He do with those who make strong drink and those who sell it? Are you familiar with these words? "Woe unto him who gives his neighbor drink, who puts your bottle to him and makes him drunk also, that he may look on his nakedness." Habakkuk 2:15. Homer Haley's excellent book, A Commentary on the Minor Prophets, makes this appropriate observation. The expression, "Woe unto him that gives his neighbor drink," sets before us the baseness of one who would intoxicate his neighbor that he might look upon his nakedness or strip him of his possessions. Page 286. I get the impression from the article in the Memphis Commercial Appeal that the Pritchard family is proud of their sleazy business. The article says the word Pritchards is plural possessive since the whole family is involved. Page B1. I want to know how proud they will be when they learn of a whole family that has been wiped out because someone was drinking Pritchard's fine rum. Incidentally, the word "fine" is their word, not mine. I would describe their strong drink and all others as being dangerous, damnable, and destructive, not because I have any ill will toward the Pritchards, but because I know what strong drink does. They also know, unless they are blinded by the prospect of making big money. Does it matter to the Pritchards, to the people who made it legal to manufacture life-destroying liquor, and to the Pritchard stockholders, that all forms of strong drink, including Pritchard fine rum, kill and maim and destroy? The rum operation is situated in an old wooden schoolhouse that also houses the Kelso Community Center. Is it not wonderful that a building once used to teach children how to be good citizens is now used to destroy families, children, and communities? How anyone can be proud of such businesses defies good sense. Besides, have the citizens of our community approved of the rum distilleries occupying the community center at Kelso? Do our people want a still in one of their school buildings? Will the rum operation eventually take the whole building and refuse to allow the community that paid for the school to use it for community purposes? Will the Lincoln County Commissioners abdicate their responsibilities to their constituents by allowing strong drink to be made in our county at a county schoolhouse? Have you talked to the county commissioners about this immoral arrangement? Mr. Pritchard is quoted in the newspaper as saying, "I know this is not grammatically correct, but this is the funniest thing I have ever been involved with. My son has visions of inheriting the business. He's got a long time to wait." Page B2. I have no idea how Mr. Pritchard used the word vision. If he used it of some kind of heavenly vision, he has deceived himself. The God of heaven certainly does not approve of such mind-altering, soul-destroying businesses. But Satan could not be happier. Satan specializes in deceiving people, and alcohol is one of his chief means of deceiving. Maybe the vision came from below, not from above. He says his son has a long time to wait before he can inherit the rum still. That all depends. If Mr. Pritchard drinks much of his own rum, especially if he drives after drinking it, the son may inherit the distillery sooner than Mr. Pritchard thinks. And if the son drinks the rum in large quantities, he may never live to inherit this thoroughly evil business. So far, according to the article in the Memphis paper, Lincoln County has not granted any financial incentives to the liquor still at Kelso. The Lincoln County executive says the county is prepared to talk about incentives tied to employment as the distillery grows. Can you believe honorable men would stoop to grant financial incentives to a business that does so much harm? If the people of our county allow that to happen, we deserve the trouble all liquor manufacturers bring on humanity. Would it not make sense to speak to your county commissioners and express your disgust at such arrangements? I wonder if the county executive has ever read, "Whether therefore you eat or drink, or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God." 1 Corinthians 10:31. Is anyone so hard-hearted he thinks making and consuming rum can be done to the glory of God? And you can know for certain that the drinking in this verse does not include drinking Pritchard's rum or any other alcoholic beverage. If the passage did include drinking alcoholic beverages, it would flatly contradict what I have read to you from Proverbs 23. USA Today, Tuesday, February the 18th, 2003, published an article with the headline, "Witnesses say panic in Chicago nightclub was sparked by brawl." The nightclub apparently was packed with late-night revelers. 21 nightclub goers, 9 men and 12 women, died in the melee at the popular late-night club. I take no pleasure in the deaths or injuries that occurred in Chicago, although the people in attendance probably knew they should have been elsewhere. If they had been at home with their families and not out drinking and carousing, those 21 people would still be alive. The nightclub was the scene of 80 serious incidents and assaults since 2000. Page 3A. Did the people who were at the club have any knowledge about the violence that regularly takes place at such establishments? If they did, and most of them probably did, how smart were they to go to such a club? If you read the account of the tragedy in Chicago, or if you saw pictures of it on television, is there any doubt in your mind that the place was flooded by strong drink? Is it even remotely possible that the crowd at the club would have been so out of control had they not been drinking? Could more of them have escaped injury or death if they had been sober? There would be no reason to conduct autopsies on the bodies of the ones who died. but there is hardly any doubt that the blood alcohol level would have been high, probably somewhere in the 10 to 15% range, or even higher. People with that much alcohol in their systems do not always behave reasonably and safely. That is one more reason for leaving alcohol, every form of alcohol, including 80-proof rum, alone. While this lesson was in preparation, another tragedy has occurred at a nightclub in Rhode Island. Perhaps as many as 350 people were drinking and dancing when a fire destroyed the club and killed at least 96 people. 96. Another 25 are in critical condition. Before the fire started, a photographer was shooting pictures of the heathen activities in the club. Did you notice on television that some of the participants were enthusiastically waving beer bottles in the air? Can you imagine why intelligent people would visit a place like the one in Chicago or the one in Rhode Island? Do they not have something better to do than to go to a place where strong drink flows like water? Have they ever stopped to think of the dangers involved in such places? The tragedies in Chicago and in Rhode Island could have been avoided if the people involved had just used their heads. But expecting people who are devoted to strong drink to use their heads is expecting too much. You do remember how foolishly Solomon said drinkers act, do you not? Please understand that I have no desire to exploit the tragedies I have mentioned just to prove how evil strong drink is. I grieve for the family members and friends of those who perished in the stampede in Chicago or in the fire in Rhode Island. But this is just one of the consequences that accompany drinking. Obviously, it does not happen every day, but it can happen any time a bunch of drinkers get together in a nightclub or in a similar setting. But what concerns me more is the drunken bum who drives on our highways and kills innocent people. People who not only refrain from drinking, but oppose it with all their might. I have difficulty thinking about drunk drivers without grieving for my wife and for her family. Shortly after Molly and I married, a drunk ran over her 84-year-old grandfather and killed him. The drunk hit him so hard that it threw one of his shoes 84 feet down the highway. My wife's father never recovered from his father's violent death. About 18 years later, a drunk killed my wife's older sister and her mother. My Molly grieved for the rest of her life over the loss of her sister and her mother. In addition, the shock was so great that it triggered a hearing loss in my Molly. She lost about 60% of her hearing within a few months of her mother's death. She had to have several operations and had to wear hearing aids as long as she lived. The cost to us in traveling to Memphis and to Chicago to visit specialists ran into thousands of dollars. Molly had loved to teach children, but could no longer do so because of her hearing loss. And yet I hear people say, if you leave alcohol alone, it will leave you alone. Molly and her family left alcohol strictly alone. In fact, they despised it because of the damage it had done in their family even before the accident. But alcohol did not leave them alone. How many widows, widowers, and orphans will Pritchard's rum produce? If he and his stockholders think it will not produce any, they're not using their heads for thinking. They know there will be fathers and mothers, husbands and wives and children who will die, either from drinking his rum or from the ones who drink it and drive. Maybe the money they plan to make will compensate for the enormous damage their strong drink will do. After all, money can soothe the consciences of some people who may not have had very sensitive consciences to begin. Is that the reason our Lord spoke of the deceitfulness of riches? Matthew 13:22. Do you remember what Paul wrote about the love of money? By divine inspiration, Paul called the love of money a root of all evil, which while some have coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. 1 Timothy 6:10. Money has to be the driving force behind Pritchard Steel. Surely nobody is hard-hearted enough to produce an item specifically designed to kill, to maim, and to destroy just for the fun of it. making and selling strong drink does not improve the community, so money has to be the prime motivation. Shakespeare was right when he said that men and women put into their stomachs that which takes away their brains. Does that apply also to those who make a substance which takes away people's brains? What I am about to say would apply to very few people in my audience, since very few people in our community fly airplanes. I am a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. I first joined that organization in 1955 when I began to fly. The AOPA publishes a magazine, AOPA Pilot. February's edition of that magazine printed an article with the title, Alcohol and Flying. I do not have time to review the article, but if driving under the influence of alcohol is dangerous, and we know it is not flying an airplane even more dangerous? The article tells of one pilot whose blood alcohol level was 10%, did not take off in the aircraft. He just taxied the plane and caused between $150,000 and $160,000 worth of damage to the plane. The FAA permanently grounded the pilot. I remember an incident from the 1950s involving a drunken pilot. He flew into the Valdosta, Georgia airport and asked the local operator to fill the gas tank on his plane. He was so drunk, he had to hold on to the plane to keep from falling. He took off toward Florida and landed on the highway between Valdosta and Lake City, Florida. A state trooper asked the man why he had landed on the highway. He said he was looking for a restaurant. He was many miles from a town. Thankfully, that was the end of his flying activities. Can you imagine anyone's being so foolish as to fly an airplane when he is under the influence of alcohol? Is it not just as foolish to drive an automobile while one is drunk? I shall close today with some questions. What are parents, preachers, and other leaders of young people doing about beverage alcohol? Do we believe our young people will refrain from drinking and using other drugs unless they are taught the danger of those drugs? And beverage alcohol is a drug. Does money mean so much to our communities that we are willing to risk the lives of our citizens to have more revenue for our cities and counties? When are we going to learn? Thank you for listening, and may God richly bless you.